Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Hot stuff.
Hey guys, welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. This is officially Fansmanship number, what is it, Owen?
Number, it's in the mid-50s. Maybe 56, 57.
That was a good year, the mid-50s.
Yeah, I remember when we cracked the 50s. That was...
Yeah.
I can't believe we were in the 50s.
It's been a while ago, though.
Especially considering that we haven't done one in quite a long time.
All three years. Yep. Live, one spot.
There's some of you out there who are like, man, why won't these guys just go away?
Or like, who?
Fansmanship number 56. I got Owen Main in front of me. I got Andy Stevens on the right. I got Shaq and Kobe in a picture here on the left, looking happy. What was that, ring number three or four? That was ring number two.
Maybe two, I think. Yeah, that was the happiest. That was the happiest.
Those were
rings.
The happy days.
That was when Kobe was amazing. Uh-huh. That was like his first, like, really.
And that's when Shaq, like, wasn't fat yet. You know, he still looked good.
Shaq never was fat. Really.
When he went to the Heat, he definitely wasn't. When he went to the Suns, he really got, you know.
Celtics.
And the Celtics and the Cavs.
This guy taking pictures.
Hey, so we are...
I'm mad. I don't know about you. I have a case of the madness.
The madness. Yeah, as you guys know, it's March Madness. I want to first and foremost congratulate the Cal Poly women's basketball team and Coach Faith Mima in the tournament for the first time. First time in their school history. Faith has been with the team for what now? Oh, 18 years, right?
16, I think.
16 years. Yeah. So... Faith, congratulations, and we're going to maybe talk about that a little bit. They did draw a 14 seed. They're playing the 3 seed Penn State in the first round of the Madness. Unfortunately, the Cal Poly men did not quite make the tournament this year, but Owen,
yeah,
they are going to be representing Cal Poly in which tournament?
The CollegeInsider.com tournament.
CollegeInsider.com
tournament. The CIT.
Okay, so explain the CIT a little bit.
So there's two... Huh. I don't remember the name of the other one. There are two other tournaments that aren't the NCAA and that aren't the NIT. There's the CollegeInsider.com tournament, which is a tournament that features teams from mid-major conferences almost exclusively. So you're not going to find any Pac-12 teams in the CIT.
Sure.
You're not going to find any no Pac-12, no Big Ten, no... The biggest conference, I think, is like the Mountain West.
So you're going to find like Southern Illinois. Those teams will be in the...
Yeah, yeah. Kind of so tournament. Like the teams that did really well, Cal Poly is actually playing their first game tonight, the men. They're playing at Weber State.
Right, Weber State.
Which is in Ogden, Utah.
Okay.
So Weber State's in the Big Sky, which is what Cal Poly's in football. So it's kind of a fun deal.
Yeah, I saw Calero last night tweet a picture of the team in Salt Lake City.
In the airport. Yeah, they were looking for food. They won't find coffee, probably, in the Salt Lake City airport. Yeah, very readily available. But
what kind of a chance do you give them in that game, though?
It's really hard to say. You know, it kind of depends on how they play. It's got to be weird to kind of come back from thinking that your season might be over, losing in the tournament the way they lost. They all shaved their mustaches, like, before they even got on the bus.
I love those mustaches, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Royer's actually looked the best.
Yeah, and Royer's dad has an amazing mustache. You know, like father, like son, I guess. Yu was efforting it, but might have taken him a little longer to get to the Royer level.
Sure.
But as far as, like, how good they're going to play, Weber State only lost, I think, 8 games during the year. They were the regular season champs, I think, in the Big Sky. Mm-hmm. They lost in the championship game. So they're a good team. Calero said they don't really have any weaknesses, that Weber State's going to have to play not very good in some areas for Cal Poly to actually win. But Weber State's got to be feeling the same way. I think it's going to be really hard, honestly, for them to win on the road.
Sure.
It hasn't happened yet. By the time this gets posted, it will have happened, and everybody will say, Owen, you're an idiot. But I think it's going to be really hard for them to win on the road.
When do these new tournaments start? Because I just remember, you know, the NCAAs, the NITs. I don't even remember when they started. How many teams are in there?
The last 10 years.
Are there like 16 teams?
I totally agree.
Go ahead.
I was a super tripped out when he told me about these tournaments. I've always been a huge college basketball fan, and I'm with Andy. I always just knew about the Madness and the NIT.
Yeah, so the last 10 years, I think the CIT's only been around for like 5 years.
Okay.
So when you think about, you know, teams getting another chance to play, they can practice for another couple days. For freshmen, I feel like especially that's got to be it's like a football team going to a bowl game. You get an extra couple games of experience, potentially. You get the experience of traveling on the road, playing in more pressure games, especially when you're on the road and you're Cal Poly. You have guys like Reese Morgan who are freshmen. Even the redshirt freshmen get a chance to kind of see what it's like to be there. The other players who aren't playing, you know, potentially as sure. well. So, and plus Dylan Royer, Drake UU, and who's the other senior? Why am I blanking? Royer, mm-hmm. UU, and Chris O'Brien get to play, another game, which is nice for them. Yeah.
Now I want to, before we just talk about the girls real quick, Owen's crunching a chip here. Here in the man cave, we have ourselves some
just for you,
bean
Luke.
Dip and some
Air
chips.
Force at Hawaii at midnight too. That'll be a good one.
Yeah.
So there's actually four Big West teams in this tournament, I think, or three Big West teams in this tournament, and then Long Beach is in the NIT. There's Hawaii and Irvine also from the Big West that made sure. the CIT.
High Point at Irvine.
32 teams.
And now staying on the topic of the men's basketball team with Cal Poly. Now tell me. It seems like Chris Eversley struggled a little bit in the Big West tournament.
Yeah. He was sick.
Oh, he was sick, okay.
He had a bad cold before the game. He had this, like, tape on his forehead uh-huh. and his nose that looked like, I don't know, it looked like he broke his nose maybe, but they okay. were trying to let his sinuses drain.
So it was a sickness thing. It wasn't necessarily
What's
just...
the other tournament other than the CIT, this other one?
It's like the CBI.
CBI.
Yeah. CBI.
Uh-huh.
TOT, that other tournament.
I think the CBI, I think, has more major conference teams, and it has only 16 teams, I think. The CIT has 32 teams, and they reconstitute every round.
Okay.
Right?
So
it's not like a bracketed thing. They reshuffle right. every round based on who's willing to actually host a game. It costs anywhere from like $30,000 to $50,000.
Who?
You have to pay to host one of these games because, A, you have to pay for... you have to pay the tournament sponsors.
Sure.
And number two, you have to also pay for the opposing teams.
And that's a lot of
travel.
Money. And that's a lot of money for a mid-major because...
Well, yeah, George Mason, Charleston, Lehigh, Wyoming, Santa Clara, Vermont.
It's a lot right. of money for those schools.
Right. And so when you're thinking about that, like Mott Gym has 3,000 people, right? It holds about 2,800 now with the new renovations. And so even if you sell the thing out, which it's actually unlikely because you have to charge students for sure. those games. So it would actually be unlikely to sell out Mott Gym for a tournament like this. Even if you sold it out, it wouldn't guarantee, like you wouldn't be able to make any money off it. You're, sure. you're actually probably losing money. Whereas if you're going on the road, it doesn't cost very much. You can pretty much guarantee, you know, that you're getting games. And so that's a nice thing from a financial standpoint.
Now on the flip side, we have the girls team like I was talking about.
Yeah,
they had a great year. They draw the 14 seed. They're facing the 3-seeded Penn State Nittany Lions. Yeah. The Lions, according to Minmosh, he said was a pretty storied program and have some serious scorers.
Yeah, they're a Big Ten school.
Yeah,
Andy and I spent a couple of days in Penn State one time.
State College. PA. What were we going to the Thirsty Parrot?
I like that.
What were the two bartenders who were roommates and had the same name?
I don't remember that.
But they had the same name.
That sounds like a weird...
From different places
like
that we were
a weird
at.
Dream.
No.
I don't get that deep in memory.
I think that whole
Most
trip...
Most of it's just a blur.
I think that whole trip was a weird dream. One of them cut Bryce off because he wanted a Red Bull with vodka or something.
Really?
And
that wasn't allowed or something?
She said it was like... She said it was like smoking crack or something, and that was incorrect. But,
okay.
Yeah, it was bad. At any rate, Penn State played Northridge at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
That's a common opponent. Northridge had a 17-point lead in the second half and gave it up, or in the first half, gave it up and lost by 12 or something. But it kind of gives Cal Poly hope, you know, mm-hmm. that, hey, they have a couple of guards that are still healthy, and they have the big lady in the middle, Molly Schlemer.
And and they lost a couple of players, though, correct?
They lost a couple of players. They lost... Woodward to a knee injury in one of the final regular season games, or actually it was like midway through conference.
Okay.
She's a senior. Mm-hmm. And then also another senior, Kayla Griffin, who was the conference's hustle player. She got the hustle player award for the conference. She's kind of a do everything.
So big losses.
Her and Schlemer actually averaged both like 7 rebounds a game. So
nice.
And her knee just you know, it went out about the middle, beginning of the second half in the championship game. So she was on crutches cutting down the net, which was kind of a bittersweet thing, I think, for her. But yeah, she won't obviously be able to play. So you're going to have a couple of other players that are, you know, that are going to have to step in and step up with Jonae Ervin and Ariana Elgado. Those are two guards that are probably as quick as anybody. Elgado can shoot the three really well. Irvin's going to have to put it up a lot. Sure. I think if Elgado and Ervin combined for, say, like 30 points, 30 plus, then Cal Poly's got a shot. Mm-hmm. But even then, I think it's going to just be really hard.
Yeah, you know.
Being a 14 seed.
Exactly.
But they get to go to Baton Rouge, and it's, you know, it's the first time either team's been in the tournament.
They call it March Madness for a reason, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first time Penn State's ever been. Oh.
Cal Poly.
Oh, okay. I thought you said either team. Mm.
The men or the women.
So on to the madness in general. I know Owen here is a UCLA fan. Andy to my right tends to be an Oregon fan. Well, I guess in some ways, definitely football.
Yeah, I remember
wise.
The days of Luke Ridenour, Luke Jackson,
Luke Jackson, and Freddie Jones.
There you go.
That was quite the trio. But and you guys just had a game against one another, right? UCLA and Oregon.
Yeah, UCLA recently played Oregon, I think, in the semifinal of the Pac-12.
Uh-huh.
No, that was a championship game.
And Oregon won.
Yeah.
Anything revealed to you as fans in that game, as far as your team's concerned?
Well, I was impressed at how Oregon didn't allow UCLA to come back on them. They kind of got an early lead, you know, between 5, 7, 8 points, and they kind of held on to that throughout the whole game. Granted, they did hit a lot of threes. They were wide open threes, but you know they did knock them down. So you got to give them that much credit. And Oregon's still kind of a young team. I don't even think they play one senior, maybe, and he's off the bench. So, you know, what I'm baffled by, though, is how does Oregon finish third? I mean, they were in first in the Pac-12 pretty much the whole conference season.
Sure.
They drop down a third at the end. Then they go on and win the Pac-12 tournament.
Uh-huh.
Why are they a 12 seed? It doesn't make any sense.
It's kind of interesting.
You know, Colorado's a 10 seed, and they finished fifth in the
tournament. It's all about RPI sometimes.
Yeah, and I was
going to
say, yeah, my guess is...
What about just games? What about just winning more games than the other team? Whatever happened to that?
I know that
I think we're getting a little too...
The Pac-12's been down.
Totally down this year.
For quite some time, actually, for about a few years now.
Yeah.
And I would wager to say they've probably lost respect when it comes to the committee's concern, the Pac-12. So winning the Pac-12 means less to the committee than maybe perhaps Colorado beating a couple, like Owen said, a couple solid squads that maybe Oregon never beat. Or
here's the thing about the Pac-12: when you're regular season champion, all respect to Cal Poly, obviously, but they lose to Cal Poly at home in preseason. That doesn't kind of bode well for a lot of people. As we continue to eat some chips on the fansmanship.com podcast, it doesn't bode well for a lot of people. And so,
yeah, but UCLA ends up a 6 seed
because they won the regular season of a major conference, and and they're the highest Pac-12 team. That's not very high.
But the difference between 6 and 12, I mean,
it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. 12 plays now. 12. There are two 12 seeds out of the Pac-12, which is kind of fun. Oregon plays versus Oklahoma State.
Right.
Oklahoma State's the 5, and I know Luke likes them. Right, Luke.
I do a lot, yeah.
Yeah, the Cowboys. And the other 12 seed is Cal, and this is an interesting matchup because Cal also wasn't super happy about their 12 seed, so neither Oregon or Cal were, I think, super happy about that. But Cal in the 12 seed gets to go play in San Jose against UNLV.
Yeah.
And so UNLV is the 5 seed there, and UNLV is really good.
They're really good.
They have like a UCLA transfer too. Mosier, I think, is a...
They're really good.
...is a guy, but playing... In San Jose, it's going to be basically like a road game, I feel like, for UNLV. And
that's kind of interesting.
So Cal's going to be, you know,
it's almost like the committee couldn't figure out where to put Cal. And they said, okay, well, we're going to slide him with a 12 seed, but stick him close to home, maybe.
Right, right. And so the UNLV game is going to be a tough one. Listen, if you're going to go far in the tournament, you're going to have to beat good teams. And that's what the coaches will say. You know, they'll say, if I'm going to go far, I know these are the teams I have to beat. And so...
But I do think it's fair to say that there is kind of a... gross political popularity contest that takes place every year during the madness. I mean,
sure.
Andy has a great point. Why does Oregon, who didn't have a bad year, wins the Pac-12 tournament, finish with a 12 seed?
Yeah.
And UCLA, okay, well, they won the regular season, but they lost in the Pac-12 tournament and gets a 6 seed. I think it's a popularity thing. I think UCLA is a storied program. Oregon's not.
And that last tournament game doesn't always matter a ton. It might bump you one seed either way.
but yeah. it's not going to make the difference between a 6 seed and a 2 seed.
Well,
or
what
something.
About the difference, like Luke was talking about, the difference between a storied name and an unstoried name in the Eastern bracket? You have Indiana as the 1 seed, Miami, Florida as the 2 seed.
Yeah, Miami got robbed. Absolutely. I think Miami's the best team in the country.
Yeah, and I think Indiana is probably the second or third best team. So to put both of those guys in the same yeah. brackets, it's going to be a beast of a Elite Eight game.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun Indiana, one. I think Indiana technically got ranked fourth with the number 1 seed.
Because Miami would be the first 2 seed, so they play
because
each other.
Because they yeah. lost, yeah, I mean, they lost a couple tough games, but they play in the Big Ten. It's really interesting. You know, the committee has such a layered, complex way of viewing things. Yeah. Indiana had a great year. I think they were 28-6 in the and they play in the Big Ten. I mean, in my opinion, the best conference in college basketball.
This year it was, yeah.
And they lost a couple close games, some decent teams. I think their worst loss was to Butler earlier in the year, and Butler wasn't that bad this year.
Butler's, I think, a 6 seed themselves.
Indiana and Miami both finished 27-6.
And then Miami's beaten about everyone you can beat. I mean, they beat Duke, I think, once or twice. Right. They won the tournament, right. Tournament in the ACC. Mm-hmm. You know, in my opinion, had the most complete team in basketball and the best point guard in basketball and Levi Larkin.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Miami does out east. Back with West Coast teams, though, I wanted to talk about one upset that I definitely picked in all of my brackets. I think I filled out 2 or 3. And
only one upset. That's kind of interesting.
An upset that I picked, not an the upset. Only upset.
Okay.
But you make different picks on different brackets? Sometimes. You don't have all the same picks?
I try to, but...
It's true. You got to go with
listen,
your gut. It's
listen,
weird.
Like... I wish I could just say make this all, but it makes me pick every time, and so I can't remember all the picks that I made. So I just yeah. I go with my gut at the time.
Sure.
I don't know.
That's the way.
It's kind
it
of
is.
A weird thing. ESPN doesn't let me.
2 words: Xerox machine. Just make a copy of it. Look at it.
But you kind of got to do
it. I did on my phone back in high school. Yeah, he was always willing to have well, it seems homework like, copied off of him, so he's but he's not used to the copying.
But I think what makes the March Madness so great before Owen finishes there is that. You know, every year there is a story. It's not, it's never clean. And so, like Owen's saying, he might pick 4 or 5 different brackets, and they're all way different. It's
they're
because
wrong.
It's a story. There's a storyline there.
Right. So the know? One that, could, and kind of because I saw him, but also because I feel like in the NCAA tournament, you need a point guard who's going to dominate the game. And I think Matthew Dellavedova at St. Mary's is a dominator. He is a point guard that is a is built.
Here I'm thinking you're going to say Trey Burke at like Michigan. You say Dellavedova.
He is built for the tournament, dude. I'm telling you. Patty Mills was a great shooter, right?
He was.
But Dellavedova is like Mateen Cleaves. He's like...
Mo Cleaves, huh?
He is like...
I like that. Bringing back some of the history.
He's strong. He's physical. If you try to get physical with him, he draws fouls. If you try to play off him, he can make threes. He's got big men inside who he can feed. That team is full of Australians and other and gets players. It gets players from all over.
Do they still have that big lefty inside? Or the guy who
I think
can,
so.
He can hit jumpers too.
Yeah, they got some players, man. Is all I'm saying. And watching the game at St. Mary's when Cal Poly went and played there, I went up there. That's a really tough place to play. Not that they're playing at St. Mary's now, but I think when you have a leader that's a point guard and an upperclassman like Dellavedova is. I think that bodes well for you. So I picked them to upset Memphis.
That's definitely fair.
That's St. Mary's is an 11. Memphis is a 6. Uh-huh. Memphis has done a really good job of kind of keeping themselves relevant without Coach Cal there. And actually, Memphis made the tournament and Coach Cal didn't this year. But I think St. Mary's as an upset there is going to be an interesting.
Absolutely.
It's going to be an interesting West Coast basketball barometer. And it's also going to matter for Gonzaga, who's a 1 seed. And they're in the same conference as St. Mary's.
Sure.
St. Mary's got in as the second team from that conference. But everybody was talking about how easy Gonzaga's schedule was. And it was, aside from St. Mary's. But they beat St. Mary's twice as well. And that's a tough thing to do, I feel like. So it'll be interesting to see how St. Mary's fares. If they do well, I think it bodes well for Gonzaga. If they get blown out by Memphis, then the Zags, you know, watch out for a second or third round upset.
Yeah, it says they're going to have trouble on defense. But they are 24th in the country field goal percentage at 53.6.
They get whatever shot they want.
So, with St. Mary's?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dellavedova is the only one that they mention. In their little breakdown here, so he is definitely their floor
okay, so,
general.
So before we finish this March Madness topic and move
on
to baseball,
number one overall seed is it Louisville?
Louisville,
okay. Louisville, yeah, and they're
because they won the Big East tournament.
To me, they're one of the weakest ones I've seen in a while. But let's before we move on to baseball for our next topic, let's just say Owen, give me maybe one. It can be one team, it can be 2 or 3. in the March bracket that you think we should watch out for?
That I picked?
Or that we should watch out for.
You know what? I think UCLA is a really interesting team to watch.
How surprising.
Yeah, right? They're playing Minnesota. Minnesota's a good team in the first round. Minnesota's from the Big Ten.
Is Tubby Smith still coaching?
No, not at all. But
let me tell you, Minnesota's very good. I've watched about 4 or 5 games this year.
When I was in Minneapolis this year, actually, I snuck into their gym.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was really cool. But that being said, Minnesota is tough. I think UCLA has so much talent. They did lose Jordan Adams, but they have a senior point guard. They have a guy in Shabazz Muhammad who's a freshman phenom. If they can be tough enough inside, I think UCLA has a shot to kind of make a little run with Muhammad.
Muhammad needs to stop pouting, though, because he really pouted a lot versus Oregon. He just flailed his arms around.
This is his swan song with UCLA. He's going to the NBA next year.
There's a reason why Dickie V calls him diaper dandies. Because he's wearing a diaper, he complains like a baby.
Yeah, so there you go. All right. But I think UCLA is the one to watch for. I think they could either get ousted in the first round or make a deep run. I think they're kind of a wild card, I guess. Okay. If you're looking to what to watch for.
I like Michigan beating Kansas in the Sweet 16 in that bracket.
Okay.
Georgetown getting by Florida. Georgetown beating Michigan. Georgetown going to the Final Four. The Final Four I have right now is Georgetown, Miami, Florida, Louisville, and New Mexico. So I guess
New Mexico
would be my surprise.
Yeah.
Three seed.
Steve Alford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have Wisconsin beating Gonzaga in that bracket, and then New Mexico beating Wisconsin. So
Alford can flat out coach.
I say watch out for Oklahoma State out of the Big 12. LeBrian Nash is a bona fide star in the making. They're crazy athletic. They can shoot the three with the best of them, and they play a nice kind of erratic, kind of quick-paced defense. And then Michigan, I think, is a team that people would say fell apart. They lost 3 or 4 games here at the end of the year, but they were playing in a tough conference. I think watch out for them as a 4 seed. That's pretty scary to me. I mean, that team was number one in the nation for a week or two there. They have a great point guard in Trey Burke. They have Tim Hardaway Jr. They have Glenn Robinson.
Kansas is a little vulnerable, too, aren't they?
They are.
Kansas is totally vulnerable. Yeah.
I've watched enough of Kansas this year to be really disgusted that they're actually a 1 seed.
Do you think North Carolina or Villanova, either the 8 or 9 seed, has a chance to beat them in the second round? No. Even
I think North Carolina does. North Carolina was quietly 9-2 when Roy restructured the starting five.
Yeah,
the last 11. You know, they got to the ACC championship and. So played Miami tough.
What I laugh at is Bill Self and some of his comments midseason.
He's crazy.
This is the worst basketball team I've ever coached in my whole life.
I love the
greatest. I think sometimes listening to college coaches is a really, really fun thing.
It's ridiculous.
Bill Self is.
It is.
Just talking out of the side of their mouth. Got that coach twang going.
Well, anyways, yeah, guys. So we will get back to you in a bit. We're going to talk some baseball and. I might want to question these guys on a couple of the recent pickups with football of the NFL. But, yeah, so we'll talk to you soon.
We'll be right back
in a second.
All right.
So what is fansmanship.com?
Say what?
We're a sports website. By the fans, for the fans.
He wants to be a Laker.
For the Central Coast.
Catch the ball.
California.
The sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.
And beyond.
Tim Tebow.
We love sports. Fansmanship.com. By the fans, for the fans.
Flashing clip-on nipple piercing and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free.
Yeah. Fansmanship.com. By the fans, for the fans.
Ever wanted to be up in the stars, looking down from the moon? Well, that's where I am right now. I'm up in the stars. I'm in the moon. I'm somewhere where no one's ever been before besides the astronauts. I'm here. You're down there. Thank you very much.
And welcome back to the fansmanship.com podcast.
What?
I was going to say something else because there's a famous YouTube video. What? But I won't say it. Anyways, we're going to talk some baseball now. These two guys in front of me, you know, I have to say I'm a little bit bitter, although I have a nice, you know, good. I have a good new job, but because of that, I couldn't go with these guys. They're going to be going to spring training, Andy and Owen and a few others. And so we're going to talk some baseball. It's kind of fitting. And the first thing we're going to talk about is I want to hear sort of a couple things you guys are looking forward to when you guys go and check out the Dodgers and, you know, some of the teams here. Talk about some players. Just sort of give me a rundown there.
Well, Owen went last year, and I didn't go last year. So I'm probably definitely a little more excited than he is, although I'm sure he's also excited. He's told me a few stories.
Yes, I am excited.
A few stories about the ongoings that went on last year. But you did get a... some kind of press pass for one day or something, and you're going to be able to...
Yeah, we got credentialed for Saturday. Yes.
Rub elbows with...
Wait, hold on. I want you guys to say... Hold on. Everyone stop. I want to say that again. Bantamship got what for what? Got credentialed for what?
For the Dodgers.
For the
Dodgers.
He was going to be
rubbing...
Dodgers
versus White Sox.
That's a big deal. He's going to be rubbing elbows with Donnie Baseball if he wants to.
Yeah. Get to take some good pictures. Hopefully we'll have some good shots for you guys.
But yeah, we're
maybe
leaving...
Maybe some good interviews too.
We're leaving tomorrow. I'll get back Monday. Are we seeing like two games a day some days?
Yeah, I think Friday there's two games.
Yeah.
Saturday, you can see either two or one.
Uh-huh.
Sunday morning is Sunday day game is the only game because we have our fantasy baseball draft on Sunday night.
Right.
Monday we can see one as well, I think. So two on Friday, two on Saturday.
One on Sunday.
One on Sunday, one on Monday. So that's going to be six games.
But the house that we did rent is a good distance from Camelback Ranch. I think it's what?
It does have a pool.
Half hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah, so. I mean, everything is within about...
Thank you for telling us that.
Within about 40 minutes.
Because Camelback Ranch is kind of on the western portion of Phoenix before you get into Phoenix.
And we're kind of on the east side.
Yeah, we're on the southeast side. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely excited. I can't wait to get out there, you know, get some sun, check out some baseball, see what the Dodgers got going. They put a whooping on the A's last night, 7-1. I want to see that, what's his name? Yasiel Puig?
Puig.
Yeah, I want to see. He hit one out last night, so yeah. I want to take a look at him.
His bat is lively.
Right, and I want to see also who is stepping up this spring, because the Dodgers basically have an 8-man rotation coming into the season.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Who are the kind of the lower, because we know about Kershaw, we know about Greinke, we know about Capuano probably.
Capuano, not guaranteed though. No. They've been talking about him as one of those later guys potentially.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did win, 15 games last year?
Yeah,
so
he had ERA close to 3. He was 8-22
Beckett,
the 2 years before.
Beckett's almost guaranteed going to start
the
rotation.
Beckett, that's what I was
Beckett's the slam dunk.
So, you know, who out of Harang, Billingsley, Lily, those guys, who's going to step up and be that
Harang,
fourth starter?
Harang, Billingsley, Lily, Capuano,
and Ryu Young.
Because Ryu is also probably going to start in the... So it's like one spot for Billings. I see Billingsley in the rotation, and then Capuano gets left out. At least at the beginning, unless Bills goes on the DL. Or
how is that fair to give Bills that when Capuano had that great year last year?
I'm just saying.
Well, I think Billingsley is the type of guy that he's very injury prone. If you start him off in the beginning of the season, he's usually pretty solid early in the season. Then he kind of trails off. At least that's the trend we've seen for the past 5 years. Then a guy like Capuano, Lily could probably step in at that point. So, you know, it's good to have many of those arms that you can start anytime
and go
six innings, get you a quality start. So those are kind of some of the things that I'm
so you're
for.
Looking at the pitching, and then Owen, how about on the offensive side of the ball?
Puig or
Puig. The G sound, just P-U-I, Puig.
Puig.
Yasiel Puig.
Yasiel. I'm excited about seeing him. He's, you know, somebody the Dodgers paid like $45 million to without ever seeing him play, basically, based on reputation. And the dude can straight up mash. He's kind of a raw talent. I don't know how... I think Manny Ramirez was really cerebral at the plate for how weird he acted sometimes. I think he was really cerebral. I don't know if Puy is like that, but he's got a bat like that. Like the way the ball jumps off his bat when you hear stories and you see...
you hear stories, huh?
You hear stories, man. You read things. Andy saw him play last night on TV. Is that right?
I just actually saw the highlights last night. They were kind of extended highlights on the Lakers show,
but
he had
a good
show.
So
Dodger highlights.
I think Puig. I think the Dodgers are really going to be interesting this year in that they're going to go as far as guys like Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford can put them better than a replacement. So the stat went above replacement
war.
James Loney was the R, right? He was like a zero. Right, so he didn't hurt you, but he didn't help you.
He wasn't plus minus at all. He was zero.
Right, I feel like, and I could look that up and probably be wrong, but I feel like can Adrian Gonzalez get back to form when he was six or seven
above replacement. Last year, I think he was like two. And for a month, when you're two games above replacement for a whole year, and you're only on a team for a month, that's not even one game that you're helping your team win differently, if you think about it right. Like that. So, we need to see if he can get up to in like the 4 or 5 range again,
sure.
Which I don't know. I think there's skepticism about
that. And then what's up?
I think Carl Crawford is the other one.
Before you talk about Crawford, what was up with Gonzalez's power last year? It was so far down.
Well, you start playing on Dodger Stadium, your power number's going to go down. I don't think he can hit 30 home runs.
He said the end of the year before or the beginning of last year, Gonzalez was hurt. He said that he changed something about his swing, according to him, that was to make up for being hurt, and that it robbed him of his power in opposite field. He said this year he's going to hit a lot more doubles, he thinks, because he can take it out to left center. He used to be like Bonds, where he could take it out to left. Yeah. Not like Bonds, but, he used to hit a lot of homers to left center at Petco. And so, as a left-handed hitter, being able to go the other way, that's a huge deal. So, we'll see if he's going the other way with 30 any power.
30 home runs, it's not... necessarily that watermark for me. Mid to high 20s is great. I want him to drive in 125, 130. That's what I'm more concerned with.
If he hits 40 or 50 doubles, then you're in good shape.
Because if you're hitting Kemp, if you're hitting, whoever, maybe, I don't know, D. Gordon or whoever's leading off, Ellis, and then you got Crawford and Kemp hitting in front of Gonzalez, Crawford and Kemp are going to get on base a lot. You got to drive those guys in.
Right. Now, Crawford.
Crawford's the other one, and he had a strained arm. It was his arm that he had Tommy John surgery. He's been hurt. He's gained a lot of weight since his early days in Tampa.
Yeah, really has.
He's somebody who hasn't looked right, but hopefully he can be right.
He's going to start, right?
Yeah, he's going to start in left field, I think, if he's healthy. But if he's not healthy, then the big question is, do you bring up Pui?
Pui.
Andy? Because you have other outfielders.
I think Crawford's going to be surprisingly decent.
Then you could put Ethier back down in the 2 hole maybe instead of the 6 hole because Hanley's probably going to hit at, it's probably going to be 3, 4, 5, Kemp, Gonzalez, Hanley, Ramirez.
Man, that's a scary
lineup. So that 2-6 between Ethier and Crawford's kind of going to be...
That's a scary lineup.
So speaking of Hanley Ramirez now,
yeah.
And Luke posted something today on Fansmanship about the World Baseball Classic, Luke. How it's a waste and how it's not really, doesn't really get anything done.
Sure.
But... Hanley in the game jammed his thumb. Now I haven't read anything about the long-term prognosis, but this is just goes to show kind of what the point you were trying to make. Yeah.
I'm probably, just saying what you guys would say too. I resent the European committee pretty much. It's pretty much a European committee for the Olympics that, ousted baseball from the Summer Olympics. And now we have the World Baseball Classic in replacement of it. And it's ridiculous. It takes away from players who, are 2-3 weeks away from a season, and here's Hanley hurt, and the Angels lost Eric Ibar for a couple weeks to the World Baseball Classic. He wasn't able to prepare, and
I
think it's kind of a counterfeit.
I don't know if I see the World Baseball Classic. I mean, because they're not even selling out.
Exactly.
I heard that
it's pointless.
Where do they play? They played up in San Francisco, I think.
Yeah.
And that holds like 41,000. And they only sold like 35,000 tickets.
Exactly. That's pretty good, I think, though. Like, for having a Dominican versus Puerto Rico final, I mean, to sell that many, I thought it was actually kind of...
You think so? Well, were they selling out before? That's the question.
They never have. Unless Mexico made it and it was in San Diego or something.
Yeah.
I just think it was in direct response to baseball being ousted from the Summer Olympics. And
really?
To me, it kind of gets in the way. It's a counterfeit. Why not have your guys, one out of every 4 years, go in hot and hard and play hard for their team, for their country? That sounded kind of weird, but I didn't mean that weird.
Anyways, of every other year, which is what the World Baseball Classic is.
So you
basically cut the risk in half that
now,
way.
Now, a Dodger player that I'm really intrigued by every year, and I'm sure you guys are too, is D. Gordon. Last year we actually went to an Angels Dodgers game, and I was actually, Owen tipped me off to this. Owen says, "Watch this. He got on with some bloop single," and Owen said, "Watch, he's gonna steal a base and then he's gonna score." And I just thought, "Okay, Owen, sure." And no joke, he gets this little tiny little crud single, like to right or something. He gets on base, and I mean, he steals second. There's one, I think second base was overthrown by the Angels catcher.
So he went to third.
He scored.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, man, that's pretty special. I mean, that kind of speed is special. And so for me, looking from the outside, from the outside looking in, I'm always intrigued by D. Gordon. As a Dodgers fan, as guys who really watch the Dodgers, Is there any, you know, base to that, or is Gordon just kind of?
Oh, he's fast. He's fast. He's just got to learn how to not strike out so much and learn how to get on base more. You can be faster than a jackrabbit, but if you don't get on base, you
exactly.
Know,
you're
not, what's so, the yeah. What's the major league about Willie Mays Hayes?
What?
You may run like Hayes,
but you hit like S. that
didn't
even rhyme. I know.
But that's where it is. I mean, you know, D. Gordon's so fast and he's so raw, athletic. You know, he's built like he's built for speed. Okay, he's decent defensively, although he's not great. If he was great defensively, he might actually be
the
everyday shortstop. He's got a decent arm. He's got a decent range. He makes spectacular plays, but he messes up easy ones.
But can you say that Hanley Ramirez is superior defensively to him? I mean, even
No. Hanley's worse, but
Hanley can actually hit.
Hanley can hit.
Well, then you put Hanley on third. Then you don't even got to. Then you can just keep Juan Uribe on the bench. You don't even have to.
Luis Cruz. So the idea is here that you either have Cruz starting at third with Hanley at short, or you have Hanley at third with Gordon at short. So the idea is that Cruz's bat is better enough,
right?
Is better than Gordon's bat enough to make up for any loss of defense you get with Hanley. Hanley's a natural shortstop. He'll actually probably be able to. I feel like when you're shortstop, you know you need to be lean. You know you need to be stretched out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I feel like you can almost.
Well, he could get to the ball. He'd just throw it in the dirt every time. You know, it's like.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what it was happening later on in the year last year. We'll see. I mean, all these guys have a whole spring training now to kind of get back in the flow. They just kind of threw these guys together at the end of the year last year, and you know, I think everyone's disappointment may have been a little bit too, premature.
Yeah.
I mean, give these guys an off season to come together. I think we're going to see some results. So
yeah, I'm really interested to see
what about how they come speaking together. Of, you know, potential results. What about the Angels?
Yeah, Luke.
Well, let's talk about the Angels because they add Josh Hamilton. Yeah. Their pitching staff is still pretty solid.
It's decent.
You know, where do they kind of go from here? You know, Trumbo's kind of coming around. He can definitely hit 30 home runs. How do you see them coming together? You know, last year definitely was a.
How did you guys not make the playoffs last year, bro?
I mean, we won like 90 games.
I know. Just
the A's just had a great year. I mean, that's baseball for you. You know what? As an Angels fan, I'm a little bit concerned with the pitching. We gave up some pitching and replaced with some hitting. We already had some hitting, but Tommy Hanson's going to have a decent year, I think, for the Angels. He won 14, 15 games. We already know Jared Weaver's going to win you 18, possibly. The X factor I think this year is actually CJ Wilson, because he looked like garb last year. I think he finished like 10 and 11.
Yeah,
he got off to a really good start, and then he was just horrible in the second half of the year, and that's kind of why the Angels
that was like
apart.
A kind of a big signing, right? I mean, they paid him a lot of money,
$75 million over five. So I think CJ is the X factor this year for the Angels. If CJ can be a solid three starter and win us 15 games. I mean, we have a decent enough, you know, middle relief, decent enough closer. Obviously, the hitting, that's just an obvious. Now, the interesting thing is going to be what Socha does with Trout this year. Is, you know, do you hit him...
With Borges? No.
Do you hit him third? Do you hit him... obviously, Pujols is third. Do you hit him fourth? I mean, what do you do with Trout? Because he's obviously got a lot of power.
Do you hit him second?
Do you hit him second? Do you have him lead off? If, you know, being an Angels fan, I would like to see Trout still lead off, because why not have a guy who has power at the top of the order? And
you can't put him in the two hole because that kind of needs to be a transition guy between one and three.
Yeah, but that's going to be interesting how Socha tries to juggle Trout, who's starting to show some signs of serious power as like a three or four guy. Now Hamilton.
Right.
You know, whereas before, out and right, you had Torii Hunter, who... Though he had a good year last year as like a 38-year-old old guy, he wasn't a power guy anymore, so it was easy to bat him second, you know? But now you have a guy like Hamilton who's a bona fide MVP, and you have Pujols, and then you have Trumbaum, who is obviously starting to come out of his shell.
I think you have to... My opinion is that you have to hit Trout second, Hamilton third,
and then
Pujols fourth.
And then lead off with Bourgeau or lead off with Ibar.
Yeah, one of those. I think you got to put the lefty in the middle.
Okay.
So who's their second baseman?
The second baseman? Yeah, well, this year that's
Howie
sort
Kendrick?
Of...
Howie Kendrick?
It's Howie, and Howie, he's batted second. Yeah, he might hit second.
See, he is kind of a two guy, in my opinion.
Howie's
he's good
a
at
great
hitting the ball
guy.
The other way. He's a good hit and run guy.
Because he hits 290
every year. So then you go Pujols, Hamilton, and then Trout fifth?
No.
No, see, that's the problem.
No.
I think what you do...
You go Trout,
I think this
Kendrick,
is what I think Angel fans are hoping.
Hamilton, Pujols.
It's Trout. Yeah, but... yeah, it'll be interesting.
Actually, where do you put actually,
he either goes first.
I think Pujols bats third.
Yeah, you want to go.
Even though you're going
Pujols,
right, but
you want to go Pujols, Hamilton, Trumbo, so you have that lefty in the middle right there. So you, if they bring in a righty, you know, then you have Hamilton behind.
So you lead off Trout still is what you're saying.
I would love to see Trout lead off still.
You know, too, in the American League, he's such a dynamic player that in the American League he can still drive runs in. In the American League, he can still drive runs in from the leadoff spot.
You hit him second. He's losing at bats.
Because you have Eric Ibar hit 7th, 8th, or 9th, who hits 290 every year. Right. He's going to get on base.
You're still having opportunities to drive in a lot of runs at the leadoff spot in the American League. You're right.
Yeah, and Kendrick, you know, Kendrick is a great second guy, and he's right, actually. He hits 280 to 290 every year. He's not a liability. He gets on base, and he's a good hit and run guy.
Yeah, you hit your catcher 8th, Ibar 9th.
But it's going to be CJ Wilson. He's the X factor.
So we are going to catch some Angels games while we're there too, I think. We're going to
catch the
Angels, we'll catch the A's, we'll catch maybe the Giants even, maybe the Padres. It should be quite a little experience. Last year we went to the Royals ballpark and that was beautiful. They share it with the Rangers. A lot of these teams share facilities. So the Dodgers share with the White Sox, the Rangers share with the Royals. A couple others as well. So, like, if you go out past left field, there's the clubhouse for one team. Past right field is the clubhouse for the other team. It's kind of an interesting setup there.
Speaking of the Royals, did they pick up Irvin Santana? He's no longer an Angel, right? He's on the Royals now, isn't he?
Correct.
Who else is on the Angels or projected to be on their starting staff other than
Weaver,
CJ Wilson.
It's pretty much right now. I mean, they've locked down Weaver, obviously CJ Wilson and Hanson. The other two were
up for grabs. Are you bummed about Irv?
Yeah, you know what? I always liked Irvin Santana.
Me too.
But you know what? I understand the Angels kind of moving on. I mean, he was a guy who was paid decent money for 4 or 5 years, and he won 11
games
a year.
You know who he is? He's your version of Billingsley.
Exactly.
Spot he had a no-hitter, and then he had an ERA close to 6. So it's
him and Billingsley are like the same guy.
They are.
They strike out guys sometimes, and sometimes they just can't get anybody out.
Yeah. It's weird.
And it's you know, it's all about when you get them, if you're playing fantasy or something. But they're just neither one of them could ever be consistent for a whole year.
Yeah,
they got Downs out of the bullpen to throw against lefties, and then they still go with that. What's his name? Ernesto Friere as a closer.
Not a huge fan of him, but
it's a little bit of a.
Oh, they picked up Ryan Madsen. They picked up Ryan Madsen, who used to be the closer for the Phillies.
So Madsen and Friere are gonna.
Yeah, which Madsen's gonna take over Friere. Friere, you know, he's a guy who'll still save you 30 games, but I don't know. He blew too many games last year.
He doesn't impress you.
No, Madsen does though. Now, before we end this baseball segment, I want you guys to give me your. Sort of like your perfect mix at a baseball game. Your beer of choice, if it's a beer, your soda of choice, if it's a soda, hot dog, whatever it is. Tell me, you're going to sit down, you're going to watch the Dodgers, say Giants, a rivalry like the Dodgers Giants. Yeah. What's in your hand? What kind of beer? What do you, I mean, what?
Well, what's I'm bringing there? A tall boy, first of all, and then I'm shotgunning in the parking lot before I go in the stadium.
Okay.
That's just for starters. No. You know, maybe have a couple of beverages.
No, that's crap.
Well, okay, let's just put it this way. A couple of beverages before you get to the stadium.
There you go.
You know, stop at a bar somewhere. I'm not big.
Pre-game.
I'm not big on, I mean, I'm all right with Dodger dogs. I'm not big on like nachos or popcorn or peanuts or anything. I'll usually bring just like sunflower seeds for myself.
Okay.
And then just go with my, standard lager. I'm not really a Budweiser guy. I'm more of a Coors guy. But if they have something a little bit better, like some kind of ale, I might even go with that.
Nice.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So
what you owe?
Yeah. So probably a hot dog at the beginning of the game is like kind of standard.
You gotta get a
base layer.
I have a feeling. Can I just say, because I think I know you good enough. Somewhere in the mix, there's gonna be ice cream.
You wait.
Or raisins. Right.
There will be ice cream.
Well, he picks the skin off and just eats the inside.
So with the hot dog, you got to go with the hot dog. If I'm going to get a beer, I'll get it early. Usually some kind of amber beer like. Although if not, then just whatever is good. Or sometimes I'll get like just a big soda if it's a night game sometimes and I just want to stay pumped. I'll get caffeine and sugar through
that's how I stay pumped,
coursing through my veins. And then And then, yeah, you know, I think after you've had your hot dog, after you've had a little bit of time to digest that, say like maybe the fifth or sixth inning,
okay,
there might be something sweet, Luke. Yes. So since there's not churros at very many games.
It's probably ice cream.
It might be ice cream.
One of those ice cream helmets.
Yeah. You know, souvenir helmets. The souvenir helmets are underrated. Yeah, I've gone not with a souvenir helmet lately because there's not really a lot to do with it. I used to think that it would be cool to have like a bunch, like lined up somewhere, but
oh, yeah.
Not really. There's nothing to do with them, and I don't have enough space with a baby coming. So
are you a souvenir cup guy or just a whatever?
I'm just a big cup guy. So like, if I'm gonna get a big soda, then I'll just get a big soda. And then, so that's like maybe the later in the game, or if there's no ice cream or if it's really cold or something, I might rock some M&Ms or something just to kind of keep
you like your peanut M&Ms.
Just to kind of keep that's me a good rolling choice. Into the late innings with some sugar. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How about you?
I actually imagine you, Owen, when you go to Disneyland,
uh-huh,
rocking a one of those Mickey Mouse ice cream sandwiches. With like the
I've never had a Mickey Mouse ice cream sandwich, but it sounds amazing.
I could totally see you like
eating the ears first.
Yep.
Yeah.
I could.
I was at Disneyland a couple weeks ago.
You were?
Actually, last week. No, I was at the Honda Center last week, which is close to Disneyland.
You gotta eat the ears first. I'm gonna eat the rest of you. What did you say?
You know what? For me, it's not really a food thing when I go to a baseball game for some reason.
Yeah, me I'm either. Not really I'll into do a hot dog, and then my sugar intake is just the beer. I'm not gonna.
I'm just not really into. I might have a hot dog, but I'm not really into that. I'm not really into.
But I won't have like five beers. I'll have a beer.
You know, I like sunflower seeds, but I have to admit, I'm really not talented enough to eat them. I'm one of those guys who actually ends up just crunching them all in my mouth.
You can't chipmunk it,
big nasty wad, you know, or I swallow it and it like slices my throat. So unfortunately, I can't eat sunflower seeds unless they're already deshelled. For me, it's beer. I'm like Andy, probably shotgun it before, have a couple shots.
How about like a margarita? I'm not really the margarita guy. Those are
If I had it my way, and if we were still good old,
it was 100 degrees.
If we were still good old America, I'd have my flask with a little whiskey and have some beers and just hang out with friends
and just buy a Coke and
just hang out with friends and just
dump the Crown Royal in the Coke.
Yeah, yeah, watch some baseball and just have a good time.
It's one way to do it.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
So is this
all
time
right, pump fired up? Let's go.
This time of the year is just awesome. I just got to say about baseball.
I want to hop on the airplane right now.
The thing about baseball this time of the year, it's just there's nothing like it.
And there's something zenful about baseball, isn't there? I mean, it's like you go to a game.
It's fresh.
Yeah.
You start the season with beginner's mind.
That's what it is.
To use a Zen, it's your cup. You have an empty cup. It's an empty, clean cup. It doesn't have any holes in it. It doesn't have any muddied water or dirt in it.
Look at empty all, cup.
Look at to go VT.
Through the season like bamboo. Bend, but do not break.
Anyways, guys, we're going to get back to you in the next segment. We're going to talk some football. I know that's not really football season, but we're going to talk some NFL. A couple signings have happened that are pretty big recently, and then we're going to talk maybe some draft prospects. Because the NFL draft is around the corner.
All right.
Be back in a second.
Now they jobless. I'm an artist, the hardest today. We all in disarray, I've been called this a day. I'm bumping away. Celebrate life to the extreme. Got the
great. And welcome back to the fansmanship.com podcast. I don't know why I said like that podcast. I think it's because earlier I said,
Coming to you live from Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
This is still the good old America. I did go ahead and
go dogs.
Anyways, well, hey, this voice is kind of fitting because we're going to talk some pigskin, talk some NFL.
Football.
Some football. But anyways, I know it's probably just the most, well, maybe not. You know, I know the NFL is sort of the year-long hot topic, I guess. But
Hot topic.
But it probably does get annoying. You want some kind of a break from the NFL. But
not everybody does.
We got to talk about it, though, because Reggie Bush switched addresses, and so did Wes Welker. And I want to get you guys' takes on that and then talk a little bit about the NFL draft coming up and some prospects there. And Owen wants to talk about the Cal Poly Pro Day. Let's begin with the Cal Poly Pro Day.
Yeah. Real quick, they had a day, a pro day, if you will. For Deontay Williams and Andre Broaddus. Mm-hmm. Brandon Machakowicz, I think, was there. And Nico Molino, all those guys from the Cal Poly football team. Along with a guy who was a running back from a few years ago. whose name eludes me now, who's they're all looking to play somewhere, brought us the quarterback, knows that if he's going to try to play in the NFL, he's got to change his position. But they were having him play quarterback at the pro day. I think it's because there's some opportunities.
How tall is he? Six?
No.
No? So he's not a safety?
He could be. I mean, he's that kind of a field, like,
is he fast enough to play a corner?
No, 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 not at all. He'd be a safety. So he'd be
more of a kind of a slot receiver, maybe, an Antoine Randall type of
guy? Yeah, yeah, if anything. So I think what they're looking at, though, is maybe to have him play quarterback in the CFL, because the CFL, the sidelines are 10 yards wider, and so that's a possibility for him. The other guys who were there, Deontay Williams, is looking to go. I think he ran somewhere in, like, the 4.5s. For his 40, which is pretty good for a big, strong running back like he is. So I think he does have a chance.
What does he weigh? Is he 220 or not quite?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's 220.
He's beefy, dude.
He's strong.
Yeah, he's a beast.
He's probably going to get drafted then, you think?
I think he probably could. Yeah, he's good, man. I think he's a late-round guy, or if not, then he'll be a practice squad guy. You know, you hear about these running backs all the time. Who's the Packers running back the last couple years?
Oh, James Starks, the guy they brought in.
Where are those guys from?
He was from Buffalo.
Right. Buffalo.
University of Buffalo.
That's not a 1A. That's a 1AA. Yeah, exactly.
He's a big, he's not quite Eddie George big, but he's a 6'2", 6'3", 240-pound guy.
All I'm saying is that these guys, these running backs come out of nowhere and they don't play for very long. So, you know, to get Deontay on a team, a guy who can run fast, a guy who can, you know, provide some bruising yards, he's got good instincts, I don't think it would be a bad pickup. So Deontay, and then, you know, they had a couple other guys who I'm not sure what their prospects are, but... Deontay is really the one to watch for, I think, as far as the draft goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had a pro day. Asa Jackson was there, the Baltimore Raven, who picked up a ring this year. That's some amazing popcorn, Luke. Is it making you hungry out there? Asa Jackson's the Raven, and he was there supporting his guys at the pro day, too. Nice. So that was kind of cool. They had scouts from, I think, the Chargers and the Raiders that showed up. So there you go. That's the latest on the Cal Poly Pro Day. But there's been some other stuff with the NFL too, right?
Yeah, Wes Walker, caught the most balls the last 4 years. Could be wrong.
Yeah, and I think the leading receiver in New England history.
Okay. Goes to Denver.
Yeah.
Kind of a week, 2 year, $12 million deal. Now let me ask you. It was kind of classic. It was kind of a classic Patriots move. Bill Belichick, according to Bill Belichick, doesn't really need anybody except for Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't really need anybody, although he was kind of ticked about that move, but... Yeah. Was Welker good because of Brady and the system, or is Welker really going to, you know, I mean, what's up with Welker?
I think that this is exactly what Peyton Manning needs. This is kind of like the missing piece. You know, you got Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker on the outside, two young, big receivers. You get Welker running around in the middle, beating linebackers on crossing routes and stuff. I mean, Manning's just going to pick him apart. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, you could say the Patriots, it's the Patriot way. They always bring in new guys that just kind of fit in. But I thought that one of the reasons why they wouldn't re-sign Welker is because they still had a guy like Julian Edelman, who's kind of was a kid that was a quarterback in college, became he's one of those slot receiver guys, kind of an Andre Broaddus type of guy, Antoine Randall. But he's not on the team anymore either. So the Patriots only have one receiver. I was looking over their roster. They only have Brandon Lloyd. All their other receivers are 2 to 3 year guys, some of them rookies, guys I've never even heard of.
Well, They signed Danny Amendola.
Did they sign Amendola? Yeah. Okay, so he's going to take that Welker spot. Okay, so then the Patriots aren't as bad off as I thought they would
be. They always have a plan B. Yeah, that's the thing about the Patriots.
But Bob Kraft said that, you know, they offered Welker more money and he took less money to go to Denver.
Interesting.
So like I don't know if I necessarily believe that.
Huh.
Yeah, I think he's full of it.
Yeah. So other than that, what other signings were there out there? Welker was pretty much the main one.
Oh, no, we had Reggie Bush who went to Detroit.
Reggie Bush going to Detroit.
There's a lot of, obviously a lot of hype. There's always a lot of hype in the media. And the hype right now is that Reggie Bush makes them, you know, the best show on turf or whatever. You know, this team, watch out. They are, you know, Super Bowl contenders because of Reggie Bush. And you know, it sounds kind of ridiculous, but... I mean, as good as Bush is. So, I mean, what's your guys' take on Bush?
I don't know about Super Bowl contenders.
Now, what about division contender?
Yes. They could beat Green Bay. They could definitely beat Chicago. I think it's just a matter of the Lions kind of getting over the hump. You know, they're kind of one of those teams, kind of like what we were if you remember talking about this, kind of how the Houston Texans were there for a while. They had so much talent, but they just didn't have the experience, the playoff experience, sure, to get over the hump. I do think that Reggie Bush is the type of back that they need for that offense. I think he's going to help them out a lot. You know, not really too much of a between the tackles type of guy, but they kind of do a lot more swing passes and screens, yeah, and things like that, and even get him in the slot and run kind of alley screens sometimes even and things like that. So there's a lot of ways you can get him the ball. But I do think it's a positive thing for the Lions, but they need to learn how to stop somebody too. So, you know, you want to make it to the Super Bowl, you better have a defense as well.
The thing about the Lions and their defense is this, it's that as soon as Ndamukong Suh's head gets on right, or as soon as they don't have him anymore, honestly, like it's starting to negatively affect their team last year.
Absolutely.
It negatively affects guys when you see as a guy get a 15-yard penalty for being an idiot. And he
doesn't know that I don't know if he's lying to
himself.
Everyone
or he's lying to himself.
And
everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it. And everybody knows that he snaps sometimes. And so now offensive players are trying to get him to snap.
Right.
And the defense knows that, but they can't do anything about it. And if he's on your team, you don't say anything to him about it, maybe, because you don't want him to snap on you. So where do you go?
Well, whoever the leader of that defense is should say something, because it's obviously not him.
You can't.
Who's the veteran guy on that defense?
There's nobody else.
Gonna say something.
And that's the thing. They've been a young team.
They're pretty young, right?
There isn't a Ray Lewis type of guy on that team.
So my point is that until that gets solved somehow, I don't think the Lions are true contenders. I think maybe they'll win some games, and I think Matthew Stafford's really good.
Me too.
And I think Reggie Bush will be fun to watch on that turf, but I don't think that they're true contenders unless or until Ndamukong Suh changes his situation.
Sure. He goes to a shrink or something. Right.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, just doesn't act like an idiot. I'll leave it at that.
And how high was he drafted when he was drafted? Was he top five?
Ndamukong? One or two.
He was one or two.
You have a computer.
Speaking of one or two, what about this year's draft? I was trying to set up the segue, but you ruined it.
You know, the NFL, yeah. The NFL, as you guys know, is all about draft picks. It's a league that's built around these late round draft picks. Any guys, it could be even well-known guys that you think are going to be good pros, legitimate pros in this draft. Now, I've heard it's very weak this year. So, you know, any players who are going to be legitimate pros, it could be diamonds in the rough. Just give me a few names that kind of excite you.
I'm looking at it right now, and to tell you the truth, the top five, the only name I really recognize is D. Milner, cornerback out of Alabama. Deion Jordan looks like he's in the top 10. He's a big...
out of Oregon,
defensive end out of Oregon, 6'6", 248. He's probably going to end up being one of those 3-4 DNs that has his hand on the ground that plays more of a 5 technique. Geno Smith, he's also top 10. He'll probably be the first quarterback taken.
Here's what I
out of West Virginia, 6'3", 218. He can cut. He's definitely a great passer, and he has some pretty good feet too. So yeah. I think he's a top quarterback prospect.
Yeah, and that's what they've been saying. The thing I think about these drafts is really interesting. You see a guy like Kaepernick who comes out. He doesn't get first-round draft pick. You didn't really hear a ton about him coming out. He got drafted by a decent team. I think you're going to see teams draft at the end of the first, end of the second, end of the third round. There's going to be some quarterbacks that get taken by teams that are good. So you're going to see teams like maybe San Francisco or teams like, you know, whoever else is good, New England, other teams like that, who are going to draft guys who you say, I don't really know about that guy, or he's not that great. And then in 2 years, so not next year, but the year after, you're going to see guys from this class who you say, man, that guy's a third round pick. I think when people say a draft class is weak, yes, there may be a weakness of talent at the top.
At the top.
But I also think that it reflects on those people who it's their job to scout that talent, and they can't scout whatever that year's talent is.
Right. Okay.
I think it reflects on on them not being able to scout that talent, and maybe the Patriots do, or maybe random team X, Y, or Z sees that talent, develops that talent, and gets that guy to a place where they're a really, really productive NFL player in 2 years.
Sure.
And if you look back on this draft, you're going to say, oh man, people thought it was a weak draft, but there's some stud tackles players in there. There's some stud defensive linemen, or there's some stud linebackers. You know, there's guys out there is my point. And just because everybody's saying it's a weak class doesn't mean that it's going to be weak necessarily. There's not a lot of superstars right away, but there will be guys who will make the Pro Bowl in 2 years.
Well,
okay.
Without a doubt. I mean, you go down top 20, I mean, you're getting into guys like Tavon Austin, 5'9", 174 out of West Virginia. He's an absolute speed burner.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he ran like a 4.2, 2 or something like that at one point, but it was, of course, was probably on the hometown clock. Matt Barkley.
Barkley is exactly who I'm talking about.
Nope.
But guys, you think he's like going to be more of a liner? Is he going to end up more of a liner?
Liner got drafted top 10. Right. What I'm saying is that my boss, play the first year.
My boss went to a game recently, or this last season. He said that Matt Barkley hits the routes in a system. If a guy's wide open, Barkley would hit you. He said Barkley cannot hit a guy like a pro quarterback can who's where he has to seam. He cannot seam a pass.
Okay.
That was one game.
They got one of his receivers, Robert Woods, in at 36.
He had some great receivers.
I'm telling you, these guys
Manti
are going to be good.
He's at 39.
Nah. On a mock draft?
Yeah, this is just rankings.
All I'm saying is guys are going to be productive.
EJ Manuel, quarterback, Florida State.
Between 30 and 70, guys are going to be productive in this draft.
Okay.
Really productive.
A huge signing that just came to mind that that I didn't think of was the Anquan Boldin signing to San Francisco.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. I've always really liked Anquan Boldin.
Me too.
His body is big enough where he can take a licking and keep on ticking, and he can take hits over the middle.
He's legitimate.
He's the possession receiver they need, because Crabtree's really not that guy. He's more the flashy type of guy.
He doesn't want to go over the middle.
Moss is a guy that'll go deep. Mario Manningham's not really an over-the-middle guy either. No. He's kind of a, take an inside move, get out to the fade type of stuff that he caught a lot with Peyton Manning. But, I do think that's a big pickup. It's kind of a security blanket.
Now, where does Vernon Davis fit into all this? I mean, Kaepernick started going to Crabtree late in the year, and Vernon Davis kind of disappeared. He was Smith's favorite target.
Yeah. They don't seem to work Davis over the middle too much.
Isn't that weird?
He's more of a corner route type of guy,
And now you bring in Anquan, who's a possession guy. I mean, is Vernon going to get any touches?
Yes.
Yes.
He's Vernon Davis.
And it just seems like they only use him down the field. They don't really.
It seems like
work
he never gets
the
touches he should get.
If you watch, and I'm not saying Colin Kaepernick is Tom Brady, but if you watch Brady early in his career,
don't ever say that again.
But if you watch Brady early in his career, and then you watch like how much he finds his tight ends now, he finds ways to get them in the places that they need to be. As Kaepernick develops, he'll get a guy like Vernon Davis in the places that he needs to be, and he'll become much more comfortable with it. Because what are teams going to take away from Kaepernick next year? The downfield throw. That's what they're going to say, beat us with 10 8-yard passes, and we'll take it. Colin Kaepernick, if you can throw 10 8-yard passes and get 80 yards down the field, high five to you. Do it every time. But what they're not going to give up is the long ball. So Davis is going to get a lot of those underneath routes, I think, this year, because teams are going to be – Kaepernick has film now. He has 9 or 10, 12 games worth of film for people to look at. And so I think you're going to find that, the whole Davis thing and him not getting the ball, it's going to be old news by the time the middle of the season rolls around.
And then did that move for Boldin officially kind of – although probably in most people's minds they already were, but did that bold move cement the Niners as the favorite of that division? Because I know a lot of people would say the Seahawks are right in that conversation,
Well, the Seahawks had a big signing themselves. One of the guys we forgot to mention, Percy Harvin.
Well, there you go.
So you throw Harvin in the mix. If Sidney Rice can get healthy, Lynch is always a
The 49ers are the
beast
favorite, mode.
Clearly.
No. That being said, Andy, right? I mean, wouldn't you agree?
I wouldn't say clearly.
Come on. The Seahawks?
I'd say
the Seahawks are pretty good, man.
I'd say if you pulled...
Who's the Seahawks quarterback?
If you pulled 100... Russell let's say Wilson. You pulled 100 members of the media from around the country, I say it goes no more than 60 49ers.
That was a classic moment. You should tape that later, though.
Something like that.
Who would the Seahawks
quarterback? You think 60-40
60 49 if you pulled 100 people.
I would agree.
60-40.
Really? Yeah. Are you saying even after the Boldin signing?
61-39. I don't know. Somewhere around
there. I would have said it was 60-40 before the Boldin signing.
Well, you go 64-36.
That's pushing it.
Six getting wild.
64.2, 35.8.
What about speaking of the draft, getting down to the top in the top? What are we at? Top 100 here. Tyrann Mathieu. He sat out all last year. What do they call him?
The Honey Badger.
The Honey Badger.
Honey Badger don't care.
Monte Ball sitting at 93. He's a back that he's had a lot of carries in college, though.
Yeah, he's got some wear and tear.
He's got some wear and tear. So that kind of rounds out the top 100. TJ McDonald from Southern California. 6'3", 219 safety.
Let me talk about Mathieu.
Son of Tim McDonald. Remember him? Safety for the Niners.
So let me talk about Mathieu really quick, because I think that's an interesting thing. He's been out of football for a year. He got caught with drugs, is that right? Or steroids?
No, he was smoking pot in a stairwell or something. He got caught, I think. He was a pothead. Are you a pothead? Have you ever smoked pot? Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads. Platoon.
Absolutely. So,
Tom Berenger. What you know about killing?
You dopers. Taking it back to Cayugas. Yes, I think Tyrann Mathieu is not going to be... He might be drafted in the top 100, but if he sees the field, it'll be really, really interesting because I don't think he's got anything. I think in his head, it's going to take a team that really knows what's up. It's going to take a team that's really willing to coddle him to have
because of marijuana, you think?
Because he's a dope.
Okay, but that's what people said about Ricky Williams, and he was a great running back for all those years.
Ricky Williams was a dope.
There's a judgment about, you know,
not to get off on that.
Was Ricky Williams ever on a winning team? I mean,
was Ricky Williams ever on a winning team?
Was there ever a winning team built around him? Not yet. But he was a legitimate 1,400-1,500 yard season
guy.
And
he stayed in the league and was productive until he retired, I think, before last year. Wasn't he Baltimore's backup running back?
Antoine Jameson has been in the league and productive, but he's never been on a winning team.
But he's not a pothead. So what's the analogy?
I'm just using Ricky Williams. You know, he was ousted because he smoked pot. Yeah. But he was a great running back.
Is it like a... I mean, what would you compare it to? Like a child actor that like was good when he was a kid, then he kind of went through a drug stage, and does he ever come back? And is...
I just feel like if
well, Mathieu... I feel like he's ousting this guy because he smokes. He's got pot.
Mathieu was a good enough and or smart enough citizen to stay at LSU...
Yeah.
If he couldn't find a way to
understand your talent and not ruin it.
If he couldn't find a way to get back to LSU,
how's he gonna make it as a pro?
God, you know, I just don't see it. Okay. I just don't see it.
Well, they said he went through, you know, Betty Ford or not Betty Ford, but you know,
Betty Ford University,
a rehab stage. So yeah. I don't know. Okay. We'll see. It's yet to be determined. He definitely has the talent, or he had the talent. So
yeah. He's a ball hawk. Yeah, we'll see. It only takes a couple interceptions. It only takes a couple touchdowns to turn you into turn all that crap that people talk into, you know, thin air.
Well, thanks guys for listening to the Fansmanship podcast, numero whatever middle 50s.
I'll post it up.
I do want to say before we bounce that I just began watching an incredible show. It's called The League. And it's
I heard about it.
Yep, and I think that you actually
is that those
YouTube
fantasy
guys
football
would like this.
Guys?
It's about the fantasy football guys,
and they're
these buddies who are all from all walks of life. Anyways, it's pretty funny. I mean, it's pretty witty and funny.
How they like try to trick them into starting guys, and they don't know the whole.
The most classic scene was I just started watching. It was like episode 3, and both these guys are lawyers, and no joke, it was the funniest scene. There's this guy who's busted for something. He would like he robbed 3 7-Elevens or something, and. The one buddy is representing him as like a defensive, you know, defender, and then the other guy is the
prosecutor,
and he's like the state prosecutor. Anyways, he goes, "There's no way you're going to get anything less than 10 years." And his buddy, the guy who's defending him, goes, "Man, come on, you know that you know he should probably get 7." Anyways, his buddy goes, who's the prosecutor, says, "All right, I'll give you 5 if you give me the number 1 draft pick." No joke, right in front of this guy. This guy's like, "Wait, what are you guys talking about?" They're like, "Shh.
Wait, is this a bit later?
This is lawyer moment. This is lawyer moment." They're like, "This is lawyer moment. And you can't even hear this." He's like, 5 years
this
and
is privileged.
Give me the number 1 pick. The guy's like, "If I give you the number 1 pick, that's worth literally this guy getting off scot-free, having sex with your wife, and celebrating in front of your face." Anyways, he ends up giving him the number 1 pick, and this guy gets 5 years, but...
Wow.
It's a pretty classic show. If you like fantasy football,
The League. Where is it from? Where was it on FX?
I think it's on FX.
Originally,
I just been watching it on Netflix.
So it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to give it a try.
Check it out.
I watch Netflix on my phone sometimes.
And that's it, guys. Thank you for listening. And we will talk to you soon when Owen and Andy get back from spring training.
We might even have some spring training podcasts.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. front page of the news. Keep trying to find my way back home, but the sign's out on